Hello and welcome to the 26th episode of Gamers Footnotes with two S's. Our web address, as always, is gamersfootnotes.com with two S's. You can also find us on iTunes for all of your Apple users out there. Now, I know this is a gaming podcast and doesn't apply to all of y'all, but on the off chance that, you know, y'all like Max and the four games you can play. Our email address is gamersfootnotes@gmail.com, and I am your co-host, JT, along with fellow co-host Steven.
Hello, everyone.
And this week, we are bringing our long-anticipated, long-awaited sort of discussion about the future of RPGs and sort of the crossroads they're at with other genres. And in our little short segments, I will talk a little bit about the new organizational system of Star Citizen, because we're contractually obligated to mention Star Citizen at least in one of the short segments every third episode. And Steven's going to talk about...
A little bit about HD remakes of games that we're seeing sort of a rash of, especially from Square Enix.
And so I think that's sort of where we'll jump into RPGs, as Square Enix is sort of struggling this issue of what's next for RPGs, because they made about a billion Final Fantasy games and countless other derivatives of the RPG genre, and you sort of see it in their modern games of them struggling with what do we do now.
Well, I think we saw one preview of a direction that they'll go in. We can't forget Deus Ex is technically Square now.
Sure.
And it really had a lot of RPG elements. It was a very westernized sort of RPG, but it really had meaningful skill building.
That affected how you played the game.
That significantly, you know, the infamous boss fights. But in the remastered version, there actually were ways to not have to play a combat wombat for the boss fights.
Well, and the interesting thing is that that's the third Deus Ex.
Yes, is so that, referring here to Human Evolution.
Yes.
Revolution.
And that was sort of the interesting thing is the very first time in an action type game like that where the vast majority of people complained because there weren't RPG solutions to the puzzle. I mean, most games that involve any kind of shooting or things like that, people are more than happy to blast their way out. The other two Deus Ex games, you pretty much have to do a combat to get anywhere. I mean, I know there's people who don't do it, and you certainly can, but there's
sort
parts
of a challenge mode.
Yeah, it's the build your own challenge. But it was sort of interesting to see gamers look at Human Revolution as being an RPG game.
And I really did. I played it like an RPG, and I thought I actually killed one guy in my first playthrough because I didn't realize the person in the intro sequence counted towards the achievement. So he got killed because it was part of a tutorial on killing people, so I did what they told me to. Always a mistake.
Don't listen to authority, kids.
No. Authority is bad. Authority does not have your best interest at heart. This brought to you by radical leftist JT.
And, which is funny if you know me.
It is. It really is. So Square Enix has already kind of answered that question a little bit, and that you can still have sort of these modern RPGs with a little bit more action. We've seen everything kind of moving towards action because action's easier to do now. There are better controls, there are better frame rates, there are better graphics, and so I think that's a lot of it. We've also seen, though, kind of the evolution of RPGs. It'll be interesting to see how Final Fantasy 15, what shape it actually takes. I couldn't tell if it was really kind of quick time events or if it was actually action. It felt like it was quick time events.
It does, and I'm not sure I'm a fan of quick time events.
I don't know how I feel about it. One way to look at it, though, is that Final Fantasy was already sort of quick time events with the active time battle system. I mean, on some level. I would hesitate to actually say that. But to a certain extent, there were elements that we can sort of see evolving into quick time events in the active time battle system already. And I'll be interested to see a fuller version of the game and how they actually kind of handle these issues. But that gives us another way that RPGs could sort of go. A lot of the modern RPG space has kind of been occupied by MMOs.
Sure.
And that tends to be kind of a lot of what we see now.
Almost all the Western computer RPGs are now almost all MMOs. Or... Well, so many elements that it is an MMO.
Exactly. And people, even one of the most recent, I feel like it was still pretty recent, Kingdoms of Amalur. It was kind of meant to be an answer to Skyrim. It's very single player, very open world. Fairly open world. Definitely an RPG, very elaborate skill systems, weapons, inventory management, whole nine yards. Lot of elements from MMOs. Now, I actually really like MMOs. I liked Kingdom of Amalur. But we start to see that, and Kingdoms of Amalur and Skyrim are another two kind of modern MMOs that kind of show what you can do, or excuse me, modern RPGs that kind of show how the old ideas stay, but they tend to get kind of altered in the name of better story, better graphics, more playability.
Well, it was interesting. It was interesting because early on you sort of hit the nail on the head that we've gotten better at making action sequences in games. We've gotten better at making the technology has evolved to make the action part more immersive. And RPGs were sort of designed around the idea that action is not immersive, that there is not a good way to render this.
Well, because early action, we talked about like the Might and Magic games where it had to be first person, or you know, just like Doom. Action was difficult. It was hard to realistically portray action in any meaningful way. And so you just didn't. And so if you wanted to tell these really elaborate stories with a lot of moving parts, you used sprites. And thus the JRPG is born.
And you got to reuse stock animations. We didn't have anything like ragdoll effects. We didn't have on-the-fly physics.
We just didn't have the memory. I mean, now a game like World of Warcraft, through the magic of servers and high memory machines, can store the, I don't even know how many thousands of pieces of equipment, each one of them modeled on 10 different races. 10? 11? 11. 11 different races. Right. I don't know. However many races are in World of Warcraft now.
The important thing is they'll take away your World of Warcraft account if you get this wrong.
Right, they will. They might find me. Pretty sure there are 11 races.
Are you counting the pandas?
I am counting the pandas. That's why there would be an odd number, because otherwise there would be an even number. But let's see. Okay. Undead, Tauren, Orcs, Trolls, Goblins, Blood Elves. Oh, I guess there are 13 races. Hmm. There you go.
See?
Yeah, that's why I had to go through the list. But the just expansion of memory allows that's big for RPGs, because now you can have, instead of just very slight recolorations on the same sword. Remember Final Fantasy I, where, you know, very few of the swords actually look different, and all of them were just, you know, kind of cutouts that moved back and forth, but there was no fluid movement. They were just almost like how we do stop motion animation. And normally they were just recolors of the same thing over and over again.
Now, and the bad guys were. Like, it was the brown wolf was the lower wolf, and then the black wolf was the higher wolf.
Well, and even when you had, like, specters and ghouls, they were just recolors of the exact same model. A lot of that had to do with memory. It was just too difficult to store that many art assets. And now we can. We can have all the variety that you see in a game like Skyrim or an MMO, like any of them. And that's because of, hey, there's just better equipment. And so that's led us to expect more, which in turn is, we're still seeing, again, through the magic of Kickstarter and Steam Greenlight and things like that, we're still seeing kind of old school MMOs, I keep doing that, RPGs, too many acronyms in this business, old school RPGs getting made with a modern twist. But a lot of times that modern twist is vastly updated graphics and, like we just said, much better inventory, you know, much more stuff. HD graphics, the HD remake, I guess I can include those in my segment too, but the HD remakes of Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2 to take advantage of higher resolutions. All that kind of stuff. Were things you couldn't do back then because the technology simply wasn't there. And so technology has driven sort of, I think, an evolution into, now that we can have convincing action sequences, action RPGs are a little bit more popular.
Yeah, and I mean, you sort of look at, one of the examples I struggle with is a game like Arkham Asylum or Arkham City or Arkham's Origin, although it sort of drifted away from this more and more. But really, Arkham Asylum reminded me a lot of what an old school RPG game would actually look like with three-dimensional combat. I mean, Batman had a skill system. I mean, he didn't have stat lines, but his actual abilities changed, and how you dealt with enemies changed based on your sort of your skill set.
The example I would use would be either of the Infamous games.
Yeah, that's another good example.
Because Infamous was almost entirely dependent on, you know, where you put your power points. In sort of an action setting. Less so Assassin's Creed, though you can see hints of it around the edges in Assassin's Creed.
It's almost like they tried it early on, and then walked away from it because they're like, we're not gonna change out your weapons.
Right. And so now, you know, you can buy weapon upgrades. But you did see with the, I've always called your, gosh, what's their actual name? Your sub-assassins, the guild, I've always called them assassinlets. But the sub-assassins that you recruit throughout the Assassin's Creed games, they often have sort of a leveling system where they, you know, gain abilities and things like that. So they're definitely, again, we're seeing not the destruction of RPGs, but them sort of being incorporated here and there in what we might think of more as an action genre. In the, you know, true action RPG, you know, Diablo-esque vein, you see a game like Path of Exile, which has a bizarrely intricate skill system, or Diablo 3 itself.
Or the original Guild Wars.
The original Guild Wars.
Which was sort of the original design template for how they thought Diablo 3 should look, as it was made by a lot of the same people.
Yes. All those games are also a direction that, you know, kind of combines more action elements with sort of a traditional RPG. You know, you get to pit, there are stat points, and there's math, and huge amounts of inventory management, and gigantic skill trees.
Well, let me ask you this question, because those are all the things that you and I love about RPG games, because we're big giant nerds. But that's the thing I think the industry is moving more away from, because it's hard to do that in a new way.
It is. Dragon's Age 2, for example, I don't think... It had skill management, but it had sort of moved away from stat points and having to worry about too much math. You basically just picked the abilities you wanted.
And it sort of printed out your characters for you.
A little bit.
In the first Dragon Age, you could... Not much, but you could make some of your NPCs do multiple things.
Yes. Or take them in different directions, at least, yeah, on different playthroughs. Whereas Dragon's Age 2, most of the characters are pretty much going to do what they're going to do. Your character, the main character, is sort of the wild card, whose name I've just forgotten. They call them something. The something. Can't remember. But, yeah, I think they move away from that. Well, look at Mass Effect and how the sharp right turn it took to get away from many of its RPG elements. I would say got rid of them altogether. I don't properly think that Mass Effect 2 and 3 are properly considered RPGs. There is skill management, sort of, but it's much more akin to skill management in a Battlefield game where you're just picking, you know, what weapon loadout someone's going to have as opposed to actually picking anything that actually changes how they interact as a character. But that is another way you could... Mass Effect 2 and 3, there was really no math except in figuring out how many abilities you could buy since the skill point cost escalated per level. Outside of that, though, so that's another example of how you can kind of have RPG-like elements in something that's not really an RPG.
Well, and to kind of add on to that and contrast it to, let's say, New Vegas, I think some of the reason you see a decrease in some of the math part is not, in addition to the math being complicated and who wants to do math homework, is the sort of notion of how do you, if your system's predicated on skill, punish somebody and then reward them skill in a way that seems fair and balanced. For instance, sort of the tax system in New Vegas is sort of like this hybrid approach of how you can get the RPG elements from Fallout versus somebody who wants to play it like a shooter more into the skill system. How do you make that fair and balanced between people? And I'm not sure we have a great answer to that problem yet.
No, ultimately they kind of went with damage multipliers. So, you know, with a skilled shooter, you'd be able to hit them, but it wouldn't necessarily damage them. A lot of games also use weapon shake. You know, basically it is easier to hit them the more skilled you are, but your skill can compensate for a lack of actual points in the ability. All interesting ideas, just kind of depends on what you're looking for. But ultimately, yeah, again, in modern RPGs, I think there is a move away from some of the math. And part of it, I think, is, again, it's kind of about accessibility.
Sure.
Because we still see in the games that don't care about accessibility, which are typically Kickstarter projects or things that have a built-in funding base, they still tend to use a lot of the... I'm going to use the recent release Might Magic 10 by Ubisoft. It is challenging. It is intimately concerned with math and building a party. And yes, you can lose the game before you've started it. Or at least you can do severe damage to your ability to play the game before you've started it. And that was because they didn't, you know, they kind of had pre-sold it and they didn't really have to worry about it. And it was meant to be a love letter to the earlier Might and Magic games. So there's definitely still, you know, that the marketing and someone buying games like that. So I think probably the explanation for some of the modernization and move away from math is as simple as, well, we want to reach more people, and more people don't like math than do like it. And the people who do like math will still play a game without math. I mean, it's very rarely going to be the only reason they got it to begin with. I absolutely think that's what happened with Mass Effect.
Yeah, they already had you hooked.
Right. So I thought, well, now we can kind of do whatever we want. And I played all three Mass Effects. I did. And I even enjoyed 2 and 3, even though they were not traditionally the kinds of game that I would associate myself with. But I did regret the loss of the RPG elements.
Let me ask you about the Old Republic. Do you feel that that was true to its RPG heritage, or do you feel that that combat still felt largely tacked on?
I wouldn't say it felt tacked on. I felt like it was MMO combat. Like, I really don't think it's properly... Well, but what is RPG combat? In some sense, you know, it MMO combat and RPG combat already weren't that far apart to begin with. I didn't really feel like the companions added meaningful other party members, so it was sort of a solo... to my mind, it was sort of solo RPG because you were the only character that really mattered. You're just so much better than your companions are, even compared to MMO main character, or RPG, just regular RPG main characters, compared to Riven in... is Riven, right? Revan. Revan is what I'm looking for.
I still don't think that's what you're looking for.
Who am I looking for?
What are you looking for?
Guy from the first KOTOR.
The Revan's the main character.
Yeah, okay, Revan. See?
I thought you were talking about one of the NPCs.
No. You know, Revan was more powerful than perhaps the rest of his party, but not as drastically more powerful as the main characters from SWTOR, I don't think. Because the main characters from SWTOR are just hand, shoulders, chest, waist, and most of the thigh better than any of the NPCs that you have access to.
They were really basically code to add some healing.
Yeah. Because really, the tank ones couldn't even hold threat that well, so... all that is to say, I think that SWTOR actually functions okay as sort of an RPG, except where the MMO problem comes in is you don't necessarily want to play that game 8 times.
No.
And that's what you would have to do, because while there were differences between the stories, not really.
Not in any way that mattered.
No. And it's so... It just... And I played KOTOR a lot of times, even though the story didn't change there either. Not really. But for some reason, the MMO aspect... I figure it's just grinding. The fact that they needed so many fill time quests that I just can't imagine doing it 8 times. I did it 3 times. I can't imagine doing it 5 times.
And you bring up an interesting point, is the fill time quests in a game like Final Fantasy or Xenosaga or pick your favorite RPG, Fallout, advance the story or new and novel in different ways, and you sort of see this oversaturation of what you can do in an MMO that sort of has collapsed the system, so to speak.
I think that was part of the problem with SWTOR. And so I actually, you know, like I said, I don't think RPG combat and MMO RPG combat are really that different if you actually burrow down into the core of what you're doing. You're hitting a button to execute an ability. The buttons have graphics in MMOs, whereas a lot of times you'd be picking from a list.
Sure.
But even Dragon's Age 2, they used icons. Or Dragon's Age 2 really just used an MMO system for it, because that's what people were familiar with. But the combat, if you were playing on a PC, the combat for Dragon's Age 2 was MMO combat.
Right.
Almost entirely. So I thought SWTOR did fine in that regard. I think where it failed is that they really wanted to tell a bunch of stories, but I don't know how many people are going to take them up on that offer. Because I absolutely cannot play through that game another 5 times. Ever.
So I only made it through once, and I was like, I can't even do this.
See, I'm an old I have, I don't know how many max level characters in my, I have a bunch of, at least 10. And I could sort of do that because it disguises the fact that you're doing the same thing over and over again much better. SWTOR, the planetary quest, basically you do them once for the Rebel Alliance, once for the Republic, and once for the Sith, and you're pretty much done at that point.
Well, and the interesting thing to me is when you look at things like MMOs and how they relate to RPGs and sort of how they're evolving the genre, is the proving why technology is going to break a lot of these things. Reasons that you had things previously don't make sense anymore. It's hard to have a compelling dynamic story if it has to be fixed for everybody. It's hard to have characters have powers when every class and every skill has to be balanced against something else. I mean, Final Fantasy X did not care about balancing the skills because it could afford to have characters be wildly unbalanced. Because that's just sort of what it presents you with. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. And I think you still see MMOs sort of struggling with this idea. The best approach I've ever seen that I personally liked, and I guess I might be in a minority on this, is the original Guild Wars, which sort of waived the notion of a lot of grinding and was like, look, we're just going to make you grind enough to figure out what everything does, and then we're going to hand you the car keys and let you drive around the rest of the world. Here's all the skills you can have. Here's all the skill points you can have. Rebuild your character as many times as you like. And I kind of felt like that was a good answer, but it must not have been, because I don't know of any other games that really allow you to do that.
It was interesting. It was definitely designed around the concept that they weren't going to charge a monthly fee.
Right.
And I liked it conceptually, but yeah, I'm kind of with you in that apparently it didn't really work super well. I think Guild Wars 2 kind of... Well, Guild Wars 2 is just a mess. I don't know what they were trying to accomplish with Guild Wars 2.
Well, they tried to do the Holy Grail, which is we can make combat interesting and make the story dynamic. Which has... I mean, we still have thick technological walls that we can't get through to make that happen.
Yeah, and I worry they ran into each one of them. So...
full speed ahead.
Yes. At very high rates of speed. So, you know, it's how it goes. You try something, you shouldn't be ashamed to have tried. May need to try something else. But again, MMOs have absorbed a lot of what RPGs used to be because they're really kind of what we always sort of wanted back in the early, you know, it's an RPG you can play with your friends. WoW has gotten a lot better about telling a story. It used to not even bother with it, but with each expansion, they've gotten bigger and bigger and really having a narrative that runs through all the PvE content to the very end, which is also why they simultaneously started making the PvE content accessible to absolutely everyone in a guild or not. Because if you're going to take the time to make the story, you want people to see the story.
You need everybody to see it.
Right.
Buy your ticket.
Exactly. And so they want everyone in there. Because if we're going to spend time on this because people want it, then we're going to give it to them. And so their approach to having the content give lesser rewards if you do it on basically having difficulty levels in MMO, I think was the right one. It, you know, gives you a reward for being, you know, for actually, you know, playing the game, and then it gives you a reward if you just want to see the story. So I think that was fine. And so...
Well, one of the things that's interesting to me is RPG has sort of become a catch-all for anything that makes combat exotic. I mean, you see it now in first-person shooters, you see it in action games, you see it everywhere. It's like, we're going to make the combat more than just pointing a gun and clicking a button. We're going to add RPG elements to it. And now I almost read that as code for being exotic. And one of the things that's going to be interesting to me is how Star Citizen sort of deals with this idea that they're going to add RPG elements. I mean, how are you going to actually pilot your ship based on your skill yet have stat points and RPG elements to it? I'm not really sure how they're going to pan all that out together, or if eventually they're going to give up on that, or how that's actually going to work.
I really don't know. I think we've talked a little bit about Borderlands and how it was real big on throwing kind of RPG elements and skill trees into something that was pretty clearly a first-person shooter.
Which, once again, fell into the, this is what makes combat more exotic.
Yeah. It makes it interesting. It makes it feel different. It makes it feel like not my character isn't exactly the same as, you know, that there aren't just four characters, that this is actually my character. It adds an element of personalization and ownership, which some games do with cosmetic items. Some games do by, you know, having skill trees. Path of Exile, another example. I had Diablo, for that matter. Diablo 3. You know, add personalization of varying degrees of import, but they make the character feel more important to the player, which of course keeps the player going, which is what games, you know, seek to do, because then you'll either buy their next one or keep paying your subscription or whatever else.
Or buy the DLC.
Right. Star Citizen will be interesting in that it really is kind of asking people to roleplay in an RPG, which hasn't been done in a while. Normally the game kind of does the role-playing for you. That's the beauty of RPGs. I will be curious to see how that turns out. It'll be a little bit like Eve in that I think There will be a group of people who get a lot out of role-playing, but they will be very small.
Yeah.
And that mostly... And keep to themselves. Right. And mostly, I suspect, Star Citizen will be a dogfighting simulator.
Well, the interesting thing is they sort of are basically going to just be like, you are role-playing yourself, so by definition, you have to role-play. I mean, it's sort of
what
just...
What would you do here?
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be what they're basically counting on. I mean,
I think it'll be fine. It'll be interesting. I'm just curious to see sort of what evolves from that.
Well, and the interesting thing is I always get a look of horror, pessimism, fear, trepidation.
Trepidation.
Pick any of your mood states when a game claims to have RPG elements, because it usually only means two things. One, you're going to make combat tedious or exotic in some weird way that's going to take me a chance to figure out. Yours too. Or you're going to tell a branching story that may or may not work out. That's sort of the camp I see Deus Ex falling into more is, well, we can tell you a better branching story and have you do certain plot elements out of a different order and sort of branch it out that way. And I think that's interesting. Do you think that a lot of companies just use RPG as a code word for, oh, look, our game has a story?
A little bit. I mean, ultimately, first off, it's RPG has always been a weird term because, of course, in some sense, almost every game could be construed as an RPG. You aren't playing yourself, usually. You're playing somebody, so therefore it is a role-playing game.
Steven, you just blew a bunch of people's minds.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of frat boys who are looking at Halo like, that's impossible.
Yeah.
That's not true. Yeah.
Thank you, Luke. Yeah, so what we normally mean by RPGs, though, are, you know, certain conventions that we've talked about, inventory, different characters, blah, 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 blah. Story. And a lot of times, it's code for either there's a... what I found it for is it's either a code word for story or for skill trees. I'm surprised how frequently RPG elements means we have skill trees.
Which is, we're making combat exotic.
Right. Like, we want to have skill trees. And so, you know, because that's really the most you can say about Mass Effect 2 or 3 is that this is a shooter with RPG elements, skill trees, and a story.
we have the story part and the skill trees. What more do you people want?
Right. So that's what I've noticed it being code for is some form of skill trees or story.
What do you think's next after? Do you think we'll ever get something better than skill trees?
Well, I mean, Skyrim's already always sort of... Elder Scrolls has always sort of experimented with the concept of, well, we won't have skill trees. It also sort of demonstrates why... Well, case in point, Elder Scrolls Online didn't really go in that route. Because that doesn't work in that model. Is there anything better than skill trees? I think before we will come up with anything better, we will see more interesting skill trees. Path of Exile kind of went the... Everyone has the same skill tree. You just all start at different points on it. And that's how we define your classes.
That's interesting.
So some things are much easier for people to get. But ultimately, within the confines of a limited number of skill points, for anyone who's familiar with Final Fantasy X Sphere Grid...
I was just thinking that. I was like, that sounds a lot like the Sphere Grid.
Very much what Path of Exile's skill tree looks like, is a Sphere Grid.
Okay.
Except there are the blocks that you have to get removed in Final Fantasy X. Those aren't a thing.
That's not gating the content that way?
No. It's pretty much... What's gated is you only have so many skill points. So there are... I haven't ever checked, but there are probably things that some classes simply can't get to because they run out of skill points before they made it there.
And can you re-roll your character? Or do you have to create a new character if you screw up your skill tree?
I think you can re-roll it, but that may be one of the... It's a freemium game. I think that may... It's a pretty unobtrusive freemium game, to be perfectly honest. I think you may have to pay for skill resets.
I think they're trying to sell you on a cosmetic thing.
They're almost entirely cosmetic. Path of Exile actually kind of does freemium the way. They have a lot of really cool weapon effects that you can apply to your weapons and things like that. But the game itself is pretty free. It's not even, oh, it's just harder if you... No, really, I think the game difficulty does not change with the amount of money you spend. I think you can basically just do it. So good on them.
Well, that raises another interesting question is how do you think difficulty plays a role in the future of RPGs? That's always been the big thing they've struggled with in history is like, do I make it too easy? Do I make it too hard?
I think we're going to start with the remade versions of Baldur's Gate, quintessential RPG, based on a pen and paper RPG. they added more settings, or they added a difficulty slider. I think that's the future. Like, look, set this wherever you want. Through the glory of Steam achievements, like, oh, if you never move it, like the hardcore achievement for Fallout New Vegas, it's like, if you never move the slider off of the hardest difficulty level, we'll give you, you know, an achievement. And then you can feel good about yourself. The hardcore thing? I haven't yet. I have a game in progress.
You're progressing through the hardcore.
I'm progressing through it. It's going to be a short playthrough because I don't really enjoy it, but I do want that achievement because I'm crazy and I have almost every New Vegas achievement. So I think I'm missing some of the Gunrunner's Arsenal ones because they got added later. But yeah, I just don't really enjoy it. It's a cool concept, but it's not the sort of challenge I look for.
So you think difficulty is going to sort of go the way of the achievement system to sort of delineate it?
I think it is, because really, generally, people just want you to experience the content the way you want to experience it. And a lot of this argument comes out, well, this is too easy. It's like, yeah, that used to be a valid complaint because you couldn't change the difficulty. Now, well, even on its hardest difficulty setting, it's too easy. Well, I don't know what to tell you.
You're just too good at it.
Yeah, you're just awesome. Play the entire game. You know, come up with challenges. There are always great community challenges. You know, play the game without ever putting armor on. Play the game with X, Y, or Z conditions. There's always more to do. But I really think for the mainstream, difficulty sliders are probably the way of the future. There will always be those games like Demon's Souls and Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2 that will just be really, really hard. Like, okay, good for you. You've proven that I can program something that the player cannot interact with. Congratulations.
You've proven that Skynet's smart.
I've never understood the appeal there myself, but whatever. I grew up in a time when games were just generically pretty hard. Because they needed to be. Now it just feels like you're punishing me.
So what would be, if you had to say a couple of things, you know, one to two or three, what do you think the next big things we'll see in the RPG genre?
I think we're going to see more QuickTime events, kind of bringing this full circle. I think we're going to see, we saw them in Kingdom Hearts 2, God of War franchises. More RPG than you'd think with all the leveling abilities and I think we're going to see more quick time events because they're a way to make thematically appropriate moments in combat more interesting without really adding anything that you wouldn't expect to have in an RPG in the first place. And really, Final Fantasy, limit breaks, things like that, they've always had button press guy. They've really already always had these things. We just didn't really call them that.
We didn't have a name for them.
But, you know, in Final Fantasy VIII, mashing the button to increase the power of Guardian forces, I mean, all that kind of stuff. What is that if not an active time event? That's basically what you were doing. So, no surprise there, but I think we're going to see more and flashier ones. Partially because of the direction adventure games have gone. I think that's just sort of more accepted as something to do. And more people have access to game controllers, even on PCs. Console controllers, rather. Even on PCs.
Now, Steam's banking on everything going that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So then let's see, what other things do I think we can expect? Moving away from math, as we discussed, I think we're going to see it a lot simpler, except that I think there will always be those math-based games on indie-friendly platforms like Kickstarter and sure. Greenlight. And then I expect we will see... I'm trying to say... One thing I've noticed... We will probably see the absolute and complete institutionalization of the rarity scale in all RPGs.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. But I know why we do it.
I've made peace with it. White, green, blue, purple, orange. And
I hate it when they flip what purple and orange mean.
Yeah, that is all. But see, you hate it because you know what purple and orange are supposed to mean. I know. And so you may dislike it, but it's going to happen.
It's a thing. That's how they keep you playing. That's how they keep you hooked.
And I really think even Might Magic 10 has white items, green items, blue items. And I think they have yellow as their legendary.
Yeah.
But white, blue, and green, or white, green, and blue are pretty much locked. And I think there was one game recently, the reverse green and blue. I didn't know what was going on.
You just panicked. You're like, I don't know what this means.
Totally lost. Like, you can't do this to me. Which one's better? I don't. Final Fantasy 14. That did, it had pink items, and then green items, and blue items, like, no, none of this, no, stop it. You have to use the World of Warcraft system, for anyone who just screamed, yes, I know, but it's the World of Warcraft system now. You have to use the World of Warcraft system, or I won't know what I'm dealing with, and I'm ashamed of that fact, but here we are.
We're nothing more than Pavlov's dogs.
Right.
We have been properly conditioned.
We have been properly conditioned. I'm looking for epic loots, and those
loots are purple. And to sell junk out of my inventory.
Right, and I want to know that white and gray are completely useless items, so that is what... What do you expect to see in the oncoming tide of modern RPGs?
A complete revamping of the inventory system. I think you'll see players don't like it, and I don't think game developers don't like it because it breaks immersion. Like, people, they thought for a long time people would just buy more storage space, but the answer is if you don't embrace the Magpie Instinct, people just quit and find something else to collect.
Yeah, Baldur's, playing back through Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2, gosh, I really hate the limited number of items. You only had like 16 item slots per character.
Right.
Which I could carry 700 pounds, but for some reason I could only carry 16 items. Even if each of those items was a quarter of a pound. Like, nope, I'm done. Too much stuff. I'm carrying 30 pounds of gear, and I can carry a total of 700, but too much stuff. Drove me nuts.
I think Star Citizen is going to be one of the games of the future that's sort of going to figure out a better solution to inventory on, as dumb as this sounds, basically put it into the cloud from your character and create a terrible narrative reason for why you can access about a billion items. So it'll be like an old-school Final Fantasy VII game where you have like 10,000 items and only one of them are useful.
World of Warcraft is moving more and more towards putting everything cosmetic or fun just account-wide. Just like, you have it, just don't.
Just do whatever you want.
Yeah, we don't care. It doesn't make any difference. And you shouldn't have to have it in your bank or in your inventory because you just keep running out of bank and inventory space. So they're going to put all the heirlooms and all the cloaks and all the...
And they're tired of dealing with the complaints.
Yeah.
Because it's people won't buy more storage.
No.
And they don't want to hand you more storage. They want to create a data management.
It is a memory issue.
On their side, like, yeah, to make the problem easier.
So, inventory, sure. Okay, what else?
I think you'll see more story integration into the gameplay mechanics. I'm hoping that QuickTime events are just the beginning of that. But I think at some point you will see the death of the cutscene. That the cutscene and the actual game will be a seamless transition.
A dream we've had since at least Final Fantasy VIII.
And, I mean, we're getting...
characters running through cutscenes.
I mean, you can almost argue almost all of the Telltale games are just giant cutscenes in which you occasionally are asked to push buttons. I think in an RPG game, as the action sort of blends into it, there's probably no reason to have a cutscene. It'll look more like Deus Ex, where you're just always experiencing the story as it sort of unfolds to you, and there's no reason to ever take you out of that immersion. And I think that'll sort of do away with some of the movie aspect of it, but I think that's another big trend in RPGs. And then I think lastly, what I'm hoping for is some evolution out of the skills tree system. We've seen a lot of hints at it of the actual weapons you use in the Final Fantasy MMO, is it 14?
14.
Sort of had this idea of 14, what 14. You equip sort of determines your character is less important. What you equip is more important.
Your class is determined by your equipment.
Yeah, and kind of like the Batman games to a certain extent, over which Batman gadgets you've acquired have made a determination on how you can move through the world. So a more blending of the kinetics of the game. I don't think that's the right word I'm looking for, but it's one of the derivatives of kinetic. The way your movement is dictated by your inventory items and what you have sort of like the evolution of the skill tree. So,
Which some games, the Ulterior Iris games have always been big on.
Sure. And I mean, like, Guild Wars 2 attempted it, failed miserably. Yeah. But you'll sort of see that the class system and the skill tree will sort of merge in together over, this is what I have, these are the options available to me, I can switch to this, and these are now the options available to me. So it's still a skill tree, you're still spending points, you're still acquiring new abilities, but it's much more seamless. There's much less thinking about it, it's more intuitive. So I think in a lot of ways RPG games will go from... I think we sort of struggle for a while if we're going to remove these elements and have nothing take their place because you don't want to deal with it, and more of we're just going to put these elements back into it. We're just going to do a better job of hiding it from you. And in some ways, the game will play itself. And that's the only way I can see Star Citizen, based on what they're saying, working, is that all this stuff's happening in the background and is all transparent to you. And you just sort of move through the world and things happen. Or, conversely, it'll just be a giant talk fighting sim.
I think there's a pretty decent chance that that happens.
And that's segueing straight into more Star Citizen talk, because that's why anybody would tune into this podcast.
Right. We're not paid. We should be.
We should be, Chris Roberts. You can write us a check. We'll give you our addresses.
If you already have them.
Yeah, let's be honest.
You've sent me stuff.
You know who I am.
Lots of stuff.
But that's one of the things that intrigued me about the organization system of Star Citizen, which we both have organizations, of which there's just us, because mm-hmm. we have a hard time coordinating our schedules.
Right. And I wanted to reserve the codename Doom.
And you wanted to be hunted down on the internet like a, you know, a savage dog. To each their own. But one of the reasons why I sort of see this evolution in RPGs that we talked about is the actual role-playing aspect of it. And the organization system that they create in Star Citizen almost de facto forces you to role-play something. Whether or not you write something completely stupid in the 18 different blanks they want you to fill in, it's almost asking you to do something and to take this slightly seriously. That there's going to be some kind of investment of your creative side into the game, and that's sort of what's going to spur the role-playing aspects. And one of the things that I found was interesting is in most MMOs, you're pretty much either a guild or a company or whatever else they're going to call you, but everybody's the same thing. There's no delineation of what that's called. In Star Citizen, we're all basically the same thing, but we have like five different choices of what you want to call it. You can be a religion, you can be a
corporation,
you can be a military group, you can be something else. Pirates.
It's private military corporation.
PMC. A true corporation.
True corporation, religion.
Piracy. And then basically unidentified, I think. There's some kind of catch-all.
There's some other randomness.
But by that definition, they're almost forcing you to roleplay something, because you're like, I'm going to treat this like a military company, or I'm going to treat
this... Mine is a corporation. We are the Doom Corps.
I'm a private military group who doesn't actually specialize in combat, because then you had to pick your specialty. Like, which of these things do you want to do?
And ultimately, this is also, they can set up a recruitment tool so that you can advertise yourself. People can do very specific searches, which they won't do, but...
But they're giving you the... They almost... It's kind of like Field of Dreams. They're building it and expecting people to come.
Yes.
Oh,
no, I love the system. I just always kind of have... Most people do not get recruited through that kind of thing, but...
Well, but it's interesting in that I agree with you, and I don't think they expect people to get recruited. It's almost like they don't expect you to leave them for any Star Citizen information you want. So I sort of see... Into my usual JT mode of, let's just look at the cynical side for a second, is they really structured the organizational system because everything they do is designed to encourage you not to go to any third-party site. That's why you don't see any detailed third-party wikis, really. There used to be some forums that were discussing some of this stuff.
But the Star Citizen forums are very robust, so there's really no reason to at this point.
And they're going to give you your own private guild chat. I mean, it's almost like anything you would want as a guild or club or whatever you want to call yourselves.
You have your own website, effectively.
Forever.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they've sort of handed this to you. And it's sort of, it's an interesting notion of the very first time I can really see that a game company is like, look, we get you're going to form guilds. We get that you want it to be a multitude of different things. And we're going to give you a sandbox to play in and build yourself a sandcastle. And have at it and don't leave. And I think that's an interesting tack to take and something that other MMO games have really shied away from. Even though they all claim to really support guilds, they almost don't in some ways.
No, it took even WoW a long time to ramp up to where they were really doing anything all that interesting with guilds.
And that was player forced. Because they're sort of like, y'all are in guilds and we don't understand why you hate us. Let's give you more stuff to do. Final Fantasy made the company system, I think, punishingly difficult. In a lot of different ways. We were in the same company briefly. Mm-hmm. You fired me for
gross. I didn't fire
you. I'm still in it?
As far as I know, yeah.
Sweet. I haven't logged on in forever.
Neither have I.
Go team. But I it was interesting, and I'm wondering, for a long time I've thought there's been this sort of trend in gaming of the game outside the game, and by that I mean everything that occurs when you're not in the game. So ARGs, fan fiction, guild chatting, and it almost seems like Star Citizen's banking on, how do I want to word this, monetizing that in a way to keep you invested in the game even when you don't have time to play the game. I mean, I'm fully expecting that there's going to be some interaction, this organization system, to your smartphone, because how could there not be? That they're expecting you that if you can run up Chrome, which you can run on any work computer without registering it, you can chat with your guildmates even when you're not playing the game. You can add in lore as you want. They've already proven that they like fan fiction. They have a whole robust section of the forums dedicated to that.
Indeed.
And we'll take some of it and actually put it into their lore. So it's interesting to me, and there's probably something I should have said earlier, is RPGs are the best genre to capture the game outside the game. This sort of notion that we fall in love with these universes and want to continue to experience them. And Star Citizen's basically going to give you the tools to do that, it looks like. And it's, I'm going to be curious to see where the line of where the game starts and stops, and then the outside things sort of move into that, and what kind of space that actually occupies. Do they work together? Do they feel like they're tack-ons? Does any of that matter? We don't know. So,
because the game doesn't exist.
Right now, there's actually no real game, and everybody seems kind of okay with that again, because there's new fun things to play with that are still not a game.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
This better go well. So, yeah. I did. I enjoyed saying I was actually in the organizational beta, which only lasted for like 2 days. Or at least I was only in it for 2 days. And it was a lot of fun. Very robust tools. Very impressive thing they've done. They should be very proud of it. I am very curious how it will interact when there's an actual game to play. So,
I mean, that will be the interesting thing, because how is this not going to eat up 20 hours of our day?
I don't know. Well, I'm going to be terrible at it, so the frustration will prevent it from eating 20 hours, but
yeah, but I think they're accounted for that. I mean, they're like, you can have your exploration and trading ship, and we require you to have very little skill.
You won't actually have to be able to fly anything.
Like, you can still make money.
Because I can't. So
I get vertigo.
Right. Like, I don't know why I bought into this game. This is a horrible idea. No, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be fine. I'm okay. I'm not great. I'm okay. So yeah, it'll be fun. We'll eagerly await the implementation of Star Citizen itself so that we can actually see the organizations in action.
At some point, I don't think there's actually going to be a game. It's just going to be all these 18 billion add-ons. And we'll still all feel like we got our money's worth.
Right.
I mean, there's still people who feel like they got their money's worth for the great ship-buying endeavor of 2013.
How are they still raising money?
I don't know.
A lot of money.
I'm like, who is still handing you money?
Not me. It would be the short answer there. Not that I don't love Star Citizen, but they've got the money they're getting out of me.
You say that now.
It's been pretty true. I haven't bought anything since the Aurora LX.
There's going to be like 4 more ships.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't care about the show. The one that'll get me is when they finally release the Connie variants.
Yeah, it's going to tease your soul.
It really will. So, I'll probably get a Connie variant. Who am I kidding? But
nobody in this room.
Yeah, exactly. But I really haven't. I haven't bought anything since the Aurora LX upgrade for the Aurora I already had. So, yeah.
Last thought on this is more game companies need to add this organizational system to their games. Now that we've seen it's possible.
Well, we saw a little of it with Final Fantasy XIV. They tried to have the whole blog and
thing on their entire
Lodestone site. Yeah.
And the entire Japanese way of doing it is like, we're going to create this and we don't know why you want it.
Right. It
was a little bit of that. Like, this will be functionally worthless and
I enjoy Lodestone. It's a robust tool, but I think
it's going to become a must-have feature for
a game. Yeah, I think we'll get there. And speaking of Japanese things, I wanted to talk a little bit about HD remakes because we've seen a bunch of them recently. We've seen Baldur's Gate, Baldur's Gate 2, both got HD reskins. And then, of course, you have Square Enix with the re-release of Final Fantasy X and X-2 on one disc. And actually, I don't know if it's one disc, but X and X-2 on in the same package. And then also Kingdom Hearts 1.5 and the very recently announced Kingdom Hearts 2.5. And it's just kind of a... I don't have a ton to say about this, actually, except I think it's interesting that we've always sort of... or for years and years and years, we've had kind of the nostalgia factor of the PlayStation 2 played PlayStation 1 games. The Nintendo Wii plays a lot of Virtual Console Nintendo games, etc., etc., etc.
Wait, there's other games? Besides Virtual Console games?
I'm told they tried to make Wii games. That's or a myth. Wii U or something. I don't know. It was a Zelda game that was pretty good, and then I think they did something else. It was terrible. Anyway, not a huge fan of the Wii, for anyone who couldn't figure that out on their own. Except for... some of the Virtual Console games are quite good. And Super Smash Brothers, but it's hard to screw up Super Smash Brothers. The Wii U shouldn't exist. Anyway, not the point of this. So we're seeing more of these high-def games. I think it's interesting that we've always kind of had this, oh, I want to play older games. But now we're actually seeing them. It's like, okay, well, how can we slap a fresh coat of paint on this and will people still buy it? And obviously the answer is, yeah. Of course we will, because we can't stop ourselves. I already pre-ordered Final Fantasy X. I already own Kingdom Hearts 1.5's Collector's Edition. And
you never need to bag on me again for owning a Collector's Edition.
Okay, your problem is that you don't just buy one Collector's Edition. Your problem is that you buy all of the Collector's Editions.
That's a valid point.
It is a valid point. So, moving on. We're seeing kind of a rash of these, not just from Square Enix, but also from other companies that sort of have the nostalgia factor. And they're interesting because, like, for the Baldur's Gate games, the graphical upgrade doesn't mean a lot because it's still sprites. I mean, yeah, it's mostly that it plays at higher resolution. Really, the interesting thing is they do often take kind of a moment in Baldur's Gate games, both of them, they took sort of a moment to address some things that hadn't made sense in the earlier games. They added difficulty levels. They added the extra classes and kits that got put in Baldur's Gate 2 to Baldur's Gate 1, so you could actually play the same character through both games. Which, if you wanted to use any of the new kits in Baldur's Gate 2, you actually couldn't, because you couldn't import a character with that kit from Baldur's Gate 1. And in the case of Baldur's Gate 2, in the case of both, they also included all their expansions. This is also true in the Kingdom Hearts games, or the Kingdom Hearts and Final Fantasy games that they've done. They tend to bundle a bunch of games together. And so, really, it's an opportunity to kind of have a greatest hits version. And what's interesting is on PCs, we've always had this sort of concept of, well, part of why you redo games is because they simply won't work on newer hardware. And we're starting to see some of that, I think, purely because it's a lot more effective to do this than to try to create a virtual console for some of the new consoles. The PS3 can theoretically play the Final Fantasy X disc, but Final Fantasy X was done in a time before Blu-ray and HD. So it doesn't look very good, it doesn't stretch well. So this sort of addresses the technological limitations of emulation. And I think that's maybe the most powerful reason to do these sorts of remakes, is that you can take advantage of new technology. Not necessarily really change the game, but kind of fix issues that would traditionally have been associated with PCs, and what happens when you try to play an old game on a new machine. So I think that's part of it. Obviously, the simplest motivation is people will buy this. Final Fantasy X, hugely popular Final Fantasy game. X-2, much less so. I think undeservedly so. I think it actually has one of the better combat systems of any of the Final Fantasy games. But, yes, rank heresy.
I'm just hoping that, you know, when the ravaged nostalgia and the internet attack you, the crazy doesn't bleed onto me.
It always bleeds onto you.
Let's be honest, I'm like in the crazy bucket.
Right. we just watch the crazy run down the walls. Anyway, yeah. So they can kind of bundle these things together, less popular game, get it out there anyway, make a couple more sales. And with the Kingdom Hearts games, again, I think part of that is as simple as Disney characters are always popular, so we release these every once in a while. What they've done with some of the Kingdom Hearts games, though, is brought them... out of handheld media and put them onto actual consoles. So it's also a way to sort of... These are not trivial modifications they're making. You know, maybe the HD reskin... See, I'm told there's actually quite a bit of technology that goes into redoing something as HD because you have to change all the textures. But certainly changing an entire game from handheld to not handheld, there's going to be a lot of scaling and perspective issues that have to be addressed in that situation. So... I've been kind of on the HD. I'm big on nostalgia anyway. I love the Baldur's Gate games. So I kind of like the HD remixes. What they aren't, though, is they don't typically change the look of the game. When something says, oh, I'm an HD remake, you automatically think, oh, this is going to be more graphically impressive. That has not been my experience. It just works better on modern hardware, and you don't have like the stretching and tearing issues that you'll have with other, if you hadn't bothered to upscale it at all.
And you usually get more anti-aliasing and blending of the edges.
More anti-aliasing. Better textures, sure. And normally your value, though, is at, well, this is, you know, more game for the same amount of money. You know, things like extra difficulty levels, you know, bonus features, stuff like that. That's kind of what... And the fact that the whole thing can be contained on one disc because now we use Blu-rays.
Now we have more space per disc. I don't know. I like HD remakes largely for the same reason that you have said. I like having the games together. I was originally bothered by the idea of paying more money to get it on a new console. Back when this first happened, before Virtual Console completely abused me of that notion, you're like, you know, you're right. I'll pay an additional $10 to play Mario Brothers 3 on a giant TV.
Right. And have it work correctly on this machine.
Yeah. You're right. I'll actually pay for that privilege, and I'm gonna go back and play Mario 3 anyways.
And for you know, someone's favorite games, I think that works out very well. Like this, I would not get every game this way. Really, I've kind of named some of the ones. If you had asked me, Baldur's Gate would have been on that list because fantastic game that just does not work super well on modern computers.
Well, and you and I would both hand over a chunk of change to play the first three Xena Sagas again.
I would.
On a new hardware.
That will never happen.
Stitch together. I mean, we know it won't happen.
It will never happen. I totally would, though. I would pay... I might pay full price for those games again just to have them on something.
Oh, I think you'd pay more than full price.
I might.
Let's be honest.
I really might.
Because I know I would. And I know you like them even more than I do.
No, I just understand them more.
Well, that's neither here nor there. I'm perfectly blessed with my ignorance. One of the things that I think is sort of left out in the HD discussion that I actually think is a more salient point that I very seldomly see discussed is this is a preservation of our heritage in a way. And these games deserve to continue to move through the genres because they're great. This isn't... A lot of analogies I see is like this is adding color to black and white movies. No, it's not. This is solving technological problems the game creators never intended to be hurdles.
They really don't look that much different. The HD right. remixing is to deal with the fact that as you get higher resolutions, things look exponentially worse when they're at lower resolutions.
Right. The only times I've really seen it not work as well is when they actually do kind of change things. Or the look... I think one thing I'm thinking about right now is the Leisure Suit Larry remake. Is adding the cartoonish graphics to it actually sort of broke the immersion and made the game seem more awkward than the sprites did. Now that's an art style choice, and that's sort of changing it. But people act like these HD remakes are new. The art world has been doing this forever, and as somebody who has four art prints on their wall that are from copper etchings, the living room
wall. Yeah, sure, fair enough.
As a way to have a piece of art because I could never afford the originals because they're all in big fancy museums and then I would get shot if I took them off the walls.
Yes.
You know, this is not new for human existence. This is how we've always treated art as we transfer it to different media so we can have it because we want to look at it as art.
And as a kind of a film... oriented person, I get irritated when people compare anything to the colorization of film. There are very specific reasons that coloring black and white film is a problem. It is not the medium or intent of the author, however you want to look at it, but basically of the director, for lack of any better figure to use here. it really does change the entire concept of the film. And you can't just say, oh, well, people, you know, if they had had color, they would have used color. Yeah, but the point is they didn't have color. It's not about textures or resolution or about, you know, because we do things to preserve black and white film all the time. And sometimes that involves recoloring them with black and white, with black mostly, but adding extra black to make the shading more clear. That is the equivalent of an HD remastering.
It's it's taking it from taking the old film transfer for Casablanca and putting it on Blu-ray.
Right.
They made the magic happen.
Right.
They kept it black and white.
You need higher resolution,
right.
And so you have to have more shades of gray. That's what happens. And Kodak Film Preservation Society does a certain amount of that. It's sort of unavoidable because these things fade over time. That is really the better analogy. What's happened is these have faded and they're being restored. It's not really appropriately viewed as color. And again, it annoys me because that is a very specific problem that is almost entirely unique to film itself. That we had this transition from black and white to color. And black and white film, what's colorized, does not work the same way. It functionally changes the way the camera interacts with the subject.
They didn't necessarily intend it to be those colors when they filmed it.
Right. Well, and the example you can use is things like Sin City, where they consciously go back even now and use black and white. There are reasons to use black and white. You get different depths of field. You can hide stuff differently. It's just different. Those concerns do not exist with video games. If you had a video game that was intentionally done in black and white, someone tried to colorize it, then you would have an argument. But just because the black and white was not a creative choice because it was the only choice does not mean that the decisions that followed after it were not creative decisions. There were no creative decisions in these video games dealing with the fact that they had lower textures. That isn't what drove the decisions, any of them. There might be an exception to that, and if so, then perhaps we should not do an HD remake of whatever that exception applies to.
Well, and I think we're seeing the case in point of that Final Fantasy VII.
Would be hard to redo Final Fantasy VII in any meaningful way.
Because you'd have to make a remake.
Yeah, you just have to redo it. An HD remake of Final Fantasy VII isn't going to change anything. I mean, you might have higher resolution textures, but you're still going to have polygons underneath those. The textures are still going to be wrapped around a wireframe. So then they would have to completely redo it. And that, I am against for the same reason that we should. As much as I would enjoy it conceptually, that's not what that game is.
But you wouldn't be opposed to the idea of them basically always wrapping emulators around it to run on modern hardware.
Oh, not at all.
Releasing that.
Not at all, not at all. Which is what they've done over and over and over again. I have Final Fantasy VII on my PC and my PS3 because I am a consumer whore.
We share that in common.
Yes. And that doesn't bother me at all because then you're just talking about, you know, moving it to a usable media. But it's not really changed. Even if they wanted to upgrade the HD textures, that wouldn't bother me. The problem would come when they tried to completely recreate the game because it wouldn't be the same game anymore.
Right, and you'd have to draw the characters different, then you'd have to draw the rest of the world different.
Well, now Square Enix can hire real localization teams because they know their games will actually sell in this country.
Right.
And which would actually cause 7 to lose some of its charm. It's folksy, nonsensical charm.
People would understand what the story is actually about.
Right, and the deep, deep cultural problems with other races in JRPGs. And why Barrett doesn't really work. And why he seems slightly racist to the American point of view. There are reasons for that. That we really don't want to drag into the harsh light of 3 dimensions. Or of 3 fully fleshed out high definition dimensions. It will not work out well for any of us. That's the kind of change, and I get so annoyed. And like, oh, this is like colorizing film. No, nothing is like colorizing film except for colorizing film. That's a very, very specific problem unique to cinema. And because it really, we never had a technical limitation where we had to have black and white video games. Well, I say that. You had watch games and handheld games when I was a kid.
Original Tetris.
Yeah, the original Tetris.
Game Boy.
Black and white. So there were black and white games, and we probably shouldn't colorize any of those. Without just totally remaking the game, which is what happened to Tetris 47 times. And then it became Bejeweled, and we moved on from there.
Well, and the interesting thing is you've seen the original Game Boy Mega Man games re-released.
Yeah.
And they don't need to be recolorized. I mean, on the DS and 3DS, they re-released old Game Boy games in the, I don't even know what to call it, tan scale?
yellowish. Sepia. Sepia. I think it's called sepia when we deal with computers.
And, I mean, they have all of their charm, and they're preserved. I mean, we do need to, at some point, have, like Gog does, have a historical record of these things. Because technology will force them to be lost in time.
It must.
It's just like none of us can play old movies because none of us have old projectors. Movie theaters all have digital distribution now. They're not film.
And there are huge societies and millions of dollars thrown into the preservation of film. It's a huge industry. Again, Kodak actually is responsible for a major amount of film restoration. That will happen with video games, which is why it's so important that they're recognized as what they are, art. Because we're already getting to the point where some of the game, you know, old games on 3.5-inch, 5-inch, just fortunately so far it's been fans. There have just been people who have moved these things through the media so that they, through the different forms of media, so they continue to exist. We will be thankful for that one day. We really will.
Right.
Because otherwise they will simply cease to be, and that's why GOG is important. Frankly, it's why Steam is important in this kind of digital collectives where these things will almost be forced to exist in perpetuity. Because they are repositories of art, and we don't ever really think of Steam like the Louvre, but...
In a lot of ways, it is.
In a lot of ways, that's exactly what it is. Yeah, so HD remakes, I think, are ultimately a good thing. Are they a cash grab? Well, yeah, to the same extent that selling anybody anything is a cash grab. But they serve an important purpose in that these are games that are disadvantaged by no longer being part of the dominant visual style, in this case being high definition. And so there's really an opportunity there to both make some money and to... change inconsequential parts of the game, not the art, not even the art direction or style, but to just keep them up to standards of modern technology. Here, meaning the resolution of the modern TV. This is not to say that it was acceptable for George Lucas to add a bunch of computer-generated effects to Star Wars. Those were adding effects, not merely...
No, but everybody agrees the screen aspect. That when he cleaned it up for Laserdisc, which people seem to forget happened first, that was positive.
That was fine, because all they really did was change it to adapt to the modern media. It didn't add anything substantive.
So. It was just all the nonsense after that.
Right.
The wheels fell off the train.
We want bigger explosions. I don't know how Michael Bay got into your head, but you don't need bigger explosions. Explosions you had were fine.
They told a story.
They told the story. They got where we needed to go. It blew up.
Well, And we very much look forward to one day when we can put this in HD and sell you this podcast.
Yes.
High definition
stereophonic sound.
The left and the right audio channels will bring you our glorious voices.
I get to be the right audio channel.
I'm not going to say anything to that. I have. You call shotgun on that, and as we all know, that's what happens. And as the perpetual player, too, even though I'm only one player, I have sort of embraced my role as the Luigi of life.
That's depressing. But you may be taller than me, so I guess you can be Luigi.
As we argue about this. Join us next time for when we talk about another genre, and I'm thinking RTSs, if that
sure,
works.
Sure, let's do RTSs. I think RTSs.
Let's do it. We'll talk to you about RTSs. That's real-time strategy games. So go and study your Age of Empires, and we'll explore this next time.
StarCraft, I'm thinking. And the HD remake of Age of Empires 2, which is also a thing.
Which is nice, actually, because it allows me to play it again through Steam.
Right.
Which makes me happy.
I should get that someday.
Because now I can Bogard all the relics like a civilized man would do.
Oh, we're good. We're going to kill this.
Anyways.
Have a nice night.